This is the regular meeting, special meeting, regular meeting?
Special meeting
of the Finance Committee for September 11th, 2025. The time is 1:00 p.m. We'll call the meeting to order. Richard, do you have any comments at this point? Thank you, sir. Next item three is a finance report. Cecilia.
So Cecilia, I took it down for the finance report basically to your business process improvement because audits is its own separate agenda item. Or do you want to talk about the audits first?
I do want to talk about the audits first.
Okay.
So audit 21-22, why is that still up there? So last time we met September 20th, it was a drop. And after that, we have a number of things to do.
We have to make sure that the 38 journal entries that was adjusted in the auditor's book ties up into our Great Plains. So there's a lot of work there, and we have to approve and agree every single one. Normally, in a clean audit, without adjustment, it's just two journal entry, but because there's 38 adjustments, it took a while to really reconcile both record. And then we have to respond to all the districts, all the material weaknesses, management letter comments. So the new financial statement that you see now has those comments, feedback from me, and it's reviewed by John as well. We've also reviewed all the notes in detail to make sure that we agree with them. So that's the work that we've done since the 20th of last month to now. Now, the auditors has also removed the management and discussion analysis, and that section, it's not in the new financial. So they also have to do work. During this period, we also have a new audit consultant started, so there's a bit of a training going on from September 20th to now.
Okay.
So that's the, and Amelia, if you can fast forward to the financial statement audit, the draft, that's included in the packet for both CFD and regular audit.
So I have the CSD first, or did you want to see the management letter?
It's okay. I just want to point out that it's there now. You have the final draft.
So this is the final?
Yeah, this is the one that we can post it on the site.
I'll take it to the board Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's on consent calendar bill, mm-hmm. so that the board can receive it and file it.
Okay.
The final, right, not a draft anymore.
So it'll come out in an approval of the consent calendar.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless somebody pulls it out for discussion.
Precisely.
All right.
Yep, so they are both on here. Thank you, Cecilia.
Okay, so
enormous
if
work.
One big burden off, three more to go. So
yeah, but the next ones will be easier, won't they?
Yes, because we've learned a lot, you know. It will be easier to not have that discovery process. Now, the next 22-23 and 23-24 audit, next two audit, you can see that, the bond audit, it's moved from 80% to 100%, we're done. So I just need to review them for the next 2 years to get it done. During the bond audit, we've looked at the Bank of America operating account, and they had been charging us $500 to $600. Call the banker, and we've lowered the fee for now. But the next step is I need to evaluate whether we need that bank account or not.
Okay.
Is it per bond document that we have to maintain a account, or can we cut all the check from RMCSD? So that's the work. And I also want to make sure that the next bond payment, which was due in September 3rd, you know, we have the authorization to go in and make the payment, and it's made now. It's completed. So the next thing we've worked on for both audits is utility billing transaction. All 12 months were loaded into Excel format. We have to move everything into the bank module, and so that we can start the bank reconciliation. That's a lot of work. And
you have to do all that manually? You can't get some routine that'll transfer Excel into
No, because the bank import into the bank rec, it's a different feel, and we have to massage the data to put it in that format and then upload it. And when we upload it, we sometimes have glitch. And today, actually, we're having a glitch moment that we need GB Consultant to go in and clean up the back end, and he cannot log in. So for the past 4 days, I'm kind of stuck because I'm ready to do the bank rec, but I can't do it. There's a lot of, like, we haven't used bank rec since 2019, so there's a lot of, I would say, junk and not useful data that I need the GP consultant to go in and clean it up since 2018. He's not been able to get in for the past 4 days. So Andy is working on it.
How do we solve that issue of login?
Andy is working on it, and you know, Andy has a software. He's not able to get in, and now he's switching it to come in from a VPN. You know, so that's what he just told me. So it's a long process, but I really want to have our accounting done through the normal way, bank reconciliation.
Yeah. We don't.
And that's going to help us in the end when we transfer all of us into Casella or wherever we're going with
it. Yeah.
I mean, it's got to get out of Excel sometime, so it might as well be now.
We don't want to perpetuate.
We don't. And it's faster that, you know, when we have the accounting system doing the accounting, we won't have mistakes.
Yeah.
And the last few years, we've been doing it manually. It creates a lot of problems. Like, fixes a module, it's a big problem. We have $1 million of journal entry there because we did it in Excel. And it's not the right way to do it. So I'm turning that on. So
are you finding in where we're doing the allocation in Great Plains now, does that look like it's working okay?
So I actually will be covering that in
okay.
a little bit.
Okay.
I'm gearing up to do that work. So can we move to?
Sure. Okay. Keep going.
So with the last two audits, we're waiting for the whole transaction to load up to the bank rec, and then we'll start hopefully next week. So if today or tomorrow GP Consultant can come in and do the work, we really can start next week for the bank reconciliation. Bank reconciliation is one of the first step to month-end close. So and remember, the next 2-3 weeks, we're doing 2 years of bank reconciliation with 4 or 5 bank accounts. So it will take a while.
Right.
Yeah. And then for the interim audit, we're done with what interim audit is: internal control testing. So they usually look at payroll, check register to make sure that we have proper approval and the transaction is appropriate for us. We've submitted all the data that they requested. I just got email yesterday of, okay, now pull these payroll transaction, pull these cash disbursements. So my team will be working with Hazel and everybody to pull the transaction out.
It looks like in 2022-23 and in 2023-24 that we're moving down the list, so we should be significantly further. We should be quite a ways along with the mechanics of the input and the reconciliation, so that we're beginning to talk to the auditors. And well, my question is not so much that as it is, where do we get to the point where you can get me even rudimental numbers on what my year-to-date and my month-to-date look like?
I have that.
I love working in the dark, but at some point.
Yeah, so wait for my bullet point at the end, because I'm gearing that up.
Okay.
And I want to talk to you about step-by-step what I'm doing to make sure you will get something very soon.
Okay.
So, So the last item on that two audits is, I still estimate that the end of November will have a draft, not a final.
Yeah.
So a draft. So hopefully we don't have any more glitch, because in the past few weeks we've been getting a lot of glitches with the import. So that's that. Now moving into audit 24-25, the reconstruction phase from March to June is lower because I had the RH consultant help with AP and also training the new AP person. So it's a little bit behind on that. But the status still changed from 60% to 75%. So I I'm hoping that if now everyone is trained, we can move faster. Because the last 4 weeks is like, I'm training a lot of people to get it up to speed, the AP, the new RH consultant. And the same thing we have to do with this year is the utility billing. We have to move every single transaction into a bank approved upload to get it ready. And that one we can do monthly bank rec once the prior years are done. I've added bank reconciliation as an item in all the charts so you can see the progress of that, because it's a long process to compare all the bank transactions to our issue check to make sure everything is accounted for. So essentially that's bank reconciliation. Okay. So now to answer your question, fiscal year 25-26, John has been asking me, what is it? Where are
this
we? How are we doing?
Yeah.
So then to gear up with that, I need to start working on the new chart of account. And so if you can move to the financial statement. Yeah, down, sorry.
Oh, this guy.
Yeah, this guy. So.
And it's little, so.
Yeah. Basically, what I want to say, this is the new format of the future financial statement that I would start having the GB consultant work on it. And also at the same time, it will facilitate using the interfund module and also the allocation module. So in front of you, you will see two sections inside the income statement. The first section is operation income statement. So Amelia, can you see the operation and you can kind of circle that a little bit?
At the very end,
yeah, operation. So under operation, you will have two sections now. You have the operation income statement and the non-operation income statement. For the first part, for the operation, you will have first the revenue, and then you will have expenses. And under the expenses, I now will be splitting the expenses into two parts. One is the operation expenses, and then down below, you'll see the G&A expenses.
Uh-huh.
The G&A expenses is the one that I need to do full allocation, so I cannot have one account number. I have to have a different number to tack on into the module
right.
for it to auto-allocate. And if you move further down, you see some red number there. That's the allocation rate. And by the way, all these numbers are fake. For demonstration, they're not
yeah,
real number.
No.
Do not follow and ask me, how come we spent that much on that?
Right.
It's just fake number for you guys to see. And that highlighted item with the red is the IRC rate that I'm going to use inside the system to allocate G&A expenses across the fund. Any questions so far? Okay.
Nope.
So I need to start a process because it would take GP consultant a while to rebucket everything for me and turn on the two module. And if I can successfully turn on that module, then I can use the same format for the next 3 years. We're going to do interfund and then also allocation.
Yeah.
Automatically. I think there's going to be a lot of glitches, but this is, we'll work it through.
And this is where, you know, so much of this administration rate has caused all the wars and done the most damage, where we've never been able to really, without estimating or without using a consultant, come up with an actual, and we started out going off the rails with security when we had that rate up at 37% or whatever it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And all of a sudden now the rate is 14.
Yeah. It's really not necessary to do any consulting work on that. Most agencies don't do that.
Yeah.
And okay. actually, yeah. if we do our accounting right for a few years, we'll know
yeah.
what our G&A costs as compared to the whole expenses.
Yeah, but if you're gonna make the number up, you need a consultant to do that.
Well, to make it up? Well, they didn't do a good job, actually. I looked at the first study that they did. They allocated a lot
of expenses.
Oh, no,
yeah, we know how bad it was.
Yeah, so
yeah,
it wasn't,
know.
Yeah, I actually ran to Amelia's office and go, we spent money into that? So now, when you see the total expenses, you see that total expenses line? Underneath that,
yeah, I see it here.
Yeah, underneath that, there's a section that I took the net income and loss for the operation and minus the property tax. And that amount, the bottom line, will tell you how our operation doing. We really should be at zero, almost zero, because our revenue should be covering all our expenses if we do it right. So again, these are fake numbers. I have a balance here, but I didn't want to go back and play with all the numbers. But ideally, what we charge our residents should be covering all the costs, and that's
I was going to say that back to you to make sure that I completely understood it. And so in other words, if property tax allocations and payback from the county were to go away, we should zero balance. I mean, we should be taking in as much revenue as we're spending.
Right.
And the concept with that was that if we get, you know, 800,000, whatever that allocation is, that money transfers over and becomes part of our reserve.
Yeah, so that's another thing in the budget. That's why I enclosed the second page here. Emily, don't go to the next page.
Okay.
Historically, we said property tax should be a reserved, but in reality, in the calculation in the budget, we take it as a compensation to our G&A costs. So yeah. Ideally, we want to put that reserve and put it aside for rainy day funding for operation.
Right.
So, you know, that is still, that's my question. Like, let's get to that point. You know, let's get the accounting to that point that we know how much we should be charging our residents.
Yeah, because that the input of that money into G&A is distorting your true number of how your operation is running.
Mm-hmm.
is on that line above this where you're mm-hmm. whatever you're doing that's causing you to generate this revenue is essentially your costs, and one has to equal the other.
Yes.
And what the county or the state, what we get back from the county at the end of the year is not relevant to that number.
Right. We should put it aside as rainy day fund.
I mean, and that's a much bigger issue, I think. At least, I've only been here 3 months. But we really haven't talked about appropriate reserve levels
mm-hmm.
for each enterprise activity.
Yeah.
And I also haven't seen any capital improvements fund. You know, I was talking to Corey and Travis yesterday about, you know, it's really hard for them to do their work and clean out ditches if they don't have a real VACCON, which comes on a 5-ton truck, which costs, what is it, Corey, $700,000. And it takes a guy with a Class A license. But if we don't have that, how can we clean out? We have to get down into the ditches with
so we do have these reserve fund, and I just finished the last audit and have to recalculate everything, but up to that point,
so
year end June 2021.
Have you done a financial testing to see if you think that that's an appropriate reserve level?
I haven't, because I'm 3 years backward and it takes a while
and it won't matter. You can go back 5 years or you can do last year. It's not an appropriate level. We don't have enough money.
We do have
money. But we just, part of our problem has been we knew we had this money, we just didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
I mean, we, as far as allocating it into the proper enterprise fund for water, sewer, drainage, where drainage is taxed, but we ran out of ways to measure that because the system fell apart.
Yeah.
And then I, if you look at your financial, you do have restricted fund of about $8 million there.
Yeah.
But it needs to be split out. And when I did the last audit, the definition of each restricted fund is so confusing.
Yeah.
I felt like I need to
bring it to the board. Is this a statutory definition or our own definition for our own funds? I mean, does this...
Some years ago what each restricted fund should be used. But each one is, when I read it, I didn't understand what is it. So I'm going to bring it back to really talk about that, because I now finished the audit. I understand how to do that really fast to give you a restricted fund picture of where are we at.
Yeah.
Then we can sit down for next year and go what our CIP should be. Can we allow to spend that much? Because one of the restricted fund that I saw, it's negative. So we have to kind of like figure it out what to do with that.
There's something too that with these guys here at the moment that we've kind of, these words have surfaced that I kind of kind of like, because of the familiarity of the words, is we've got water and sewer. We got above ground and we got below ground. I mean, and granted, I understand there's equipment and stuff involved, but for the most part, our costs are really focused on water plants and
above,
water treatment,
yeah,
and delivery systems, pumps, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, and pipes in the ground, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, and using those categorizations, I think, from a public viewpoint, will help us to understand that. You might want to think about, it's not so much where you want to categorize it accounting-wise, but what we call that GL number or chart of accounts, if you want to call it that. It makes more sense to me to look at them that way. And you know, we seem to do a lot of work that we would call below ground, or, you know, if you're considering the pumping and pumping stations to be that.
Actually, if you want to step up on that end, is really look at our underground and see how the age and the depreciation, and say, let's plan for the next 10 years, how much reserve we need to do to get to that,
yeah,
point, and when is it that we need to replace all these? So those are called capital budgeting, visioning,
right,
all the way to 10,
right,
15 years. We haven't, I'm pretty sure, because without a fixed asset record, we cannot do it. But Mark has turned on that fixed asset record. It's not...
What do you call that?
Fixed asset module inside Great Plains.
That's just a... Great Plains named it that?
Yeah, it's a... Most accounting software has an individual fixed asset module that you can kind of like pull all the data and go, I want this category, what are they? What are the age? When,
yeah,
do we buy,
yeah,
it? So it's in there.
Sure.
So we can...
It just helps us plan our real-world,
right,
depreciation.
Right, and you,
yeah,
should be really doing capital budgeting for 10, 15 years,
whoa,
especially for underground, you know, kind of thing.
We haven't done audits for 5 years, and you want us to do budgeting for 10?
Well,
John,
I mean,
didn't we already do all that?
With the
Loomis report.
Loomis report, yeah. We have a start. As a matter of fact, quite honestly, when I read that, I thought it was one of the better consulting efforts that,
yeah,
we've ever undertaken. I mean, what was in there is pretty meaningful information.
Yeah.
I think it's going to help us.
It's something to start a base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll get into, you know, next week's meeting is, we've got all these priorities hanging around that we understand our priorities, which is we just don't have a pecking order for them, and I think we need to talk about that somewhat next week.
I can do a preliminary 3 years restricted fund going forward, and not like, it might not be right, but you,
sure,
know, get you closer to
estimate.
That, yeah, estimate, you know,
and really any forecast is an estimate, but you know, if you don't start, you can't refine it.
Right. At least it's, you know, it's 8 million or 9
yeah.
million or
yeah.
what is it, you know?
How many zeros?
Yeah, how many zeros? So I would do that next time. So another feature that it's great is you can see that there's a line called operating expenses, right? So you can essentially take your revenue minus the operation expenses and get to like a profit margin, or what's the cost percentage, and you can actually compare that to other agency who's functioning similar to say, are we doing good? Are we not doing good? Is there improvement?
This is like an Ernst & Young report on CSDs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, yeah. I used to do a lot more costing, but your financial statement has to set up correctly for me to do a lot of costing. So
if you don't like the margins, you just raise the price of water.
Right. And mostly
welcome
it's
to
like
the private sector.
No, I know how it works.
Right? Yeah, are we functioning effectively using that percentage?
Yeah.
You know, then I can say, are you guys doing a good job? You know. So that's the operation side. And Amelia, if you can go down to the non-operating. So non-operating is essentially revenue and expenses that doesn't pertain to running the utility or the security. And I bucket them into two. One is the, let me get to that, sorry. I can't really see, one is the reserve. So you have the reserve fund there, and you also have the security impact fee and the interest and investment earning from those funds. So that's one section. Eventually, I will open up that section to let you know how we doing on that. Do we have enough remaining balance? It's not just the revenue that we earn. How much do we have left? You know. So, and then the other section is the developer activity. And this is something that I want to make sure that the end goal is whatever activity costs that we incur, we get it back from the developer. So at the end, you see that I have 2, 4, 3, 4 from the developer activity income expenses. The point is they should be paying a little bit more to cover our G&A, and that should be like around 10 to same percentage under the G&A section. So if we do the budget well, we know what our G&A costs as a percentage of revenue or as a percentage of total cost, we can estimate each year how do we charge our developer.
Yeah.
Remember I talked about that we should be charging them a fee, not the direct staff amount, but a loaded rate plus some sort of margin.
And so, and there might be, you know, whether it be during the budgeting process or something else, there might be an appropriate time of year where we take them all on at the same time.
Right.
We should understand, we should understand every one of those conditions that we have that requires an overhead contribution by the developer for whatever project they're doing.
Right.
And if it's 5% this year and inflation is a factor and it's going to go to 5.5% or 6% the following year,
then
there should probably be an exact date in the year.
Yeah.
Maybe it corresponds with budgeting, I don't know. But
yes,
at
usually,
that point, we do it. Because
yeah,
you would want to know that for the budget anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And we should have that in the budget process, and you see a percentage, you know, when I calculate using this format to say our G&A cost is now 10 or 15%, and that's what we're going to use to load up the contract for any developer contract that we sign. We will spell out this is how we're going to charge you in the future.
Okay.
So, so this format, it's the future. And I am also, in order to give you a financial statement, I have to start working on the future accounting. And if you can go back to the previous page.
Okay.
Please, thank you. And I've started a few things. If you move up a little bit to number one, A.
A?
Yeah.
There you go.
So under A, I have really started the credit card reconciliation posted to Tyler to the bank. Previously, we have never really done that. We don't know what is posted in Tyler is the same amount as bank. We don't know that. So we are going to start that. We had a meeting already with the staff who are involved and kind of gearing up how we're going to do this reconciliation. And that's part of the bank reconciliation process. And then the second thing we're going to do is cash receipts posting to Great Plains. Our front desk person will start doing it. So just to remind you what we used to do is we enter the cash receipts into the bank, we scan it in, a report comes out, and then we have another person type it up into an Excel format, give it to Mark to sign, and then Mark turn it around and give it to Chris to enter. So we've now touched the transaction 4 times already.
Yeah.
When I'm doing it away, I'm just going to say scan it in the bank and turn around, enter into Great Plains. So
but
that will.
The scanner, I mean, if we use the right scanner software and firmware, can't we just automatically have an input into the accounting system?
From the scanner to the bank doesn't talk to Great Plains. But you know what? Enter into Great Plains takes a minute, but touching the paper takes 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a simple process. I have a consultant here who's really good with Great Plains. She has already typed in step-by-step process. I review it, and then next week, if Andy is not tied up, our IT person is not tied up with solving the GP consultant glitch to come in, then I can have the front desk to start that process. And so slowly I want to build up the next few, the July, August, and September month, so that you can see something, you know. So that's starting. Fire hydrant billing, the number C, we've also started that process. Maybe 40% we've identified in the past 3 years who are the user of the fire hydrant. The next step is to figure it out how to bill them. Some of them we might not be able to go back and bill them. But we at least want to calculate. And that's part of the work that we have to do as part of the audit anyway. So, and D, we just go through this, the chart of account. And finally, all these will help us to get to the financial statement for 25-26 quicker.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And
this one, the budget, I just want to show you the, this is the last bill. So this is the last budget year that we approve. I just want to show that the before and after change, how much we've changed with the format.
Okay.
And this is particularly for Bill because Bill was not here when we approved the budgets. So.
I just wasn't sitting here.
Oh.
I was sitting up there.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I come to these things.
Just worried about how am I going to afford this?
Okay. So any questions so far? You guys okay? It's your first time listening to this. Lots of work to do. Any questions?
No, I think that's... I mean, you know, I'm... I think demonstrating the progress is helpful because, you know, we went through a whole year there where it was always going to be July, and then it wasn't July. But what I'm looking at here and the way these numbers are falling together, I think by the end of the year here, we're going to have ourselves reasonably under control. I'm an optimist.
Based on my estimation, we'll have the next two audit done, but then all of them will be so good in the past two audit, they can all go in and then attack the third audit. You know, the 24-25 audit, it will be faster. But I really think that will be next year. Any questions?
So I'm just looking through here. The number escapes me. I've seen it, and now I can't remember it. On the audit we just completed. What do they show? What is our asset value? I mean, in terms of millions of dollars, I'm just curious now.
Can you go
here's the CSD audit. How far down is it?
I don't know. Can you keep going? I didn't print out one. Okay, so asset. So if you look at the screen right here and...
Okay.
The asset, it's...
I have one printout for you.
I got it already. So it's the last column. Thank you, Amelia. The last column, the total asset is $43 million.
Okay.
$45 million with all the fund.
And that's...
Oh, I see it right here.
That's accumulated assets.
Total asset. And total majority assets. Of this is sitting in fixed asset. So there's 29 million? Is it 29? I can't see.
This right here?
It's 29 million, and the last column is sitting in fixed asset.
There you go. This guy 29,513.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking here that when you start benchmarking, you know, a real number of what we need in terms of reserves. I mean, it's a good start. To understand that, you know, you're working in fixed assets, you're working with $29 million.
But remember, the Lomas asset, they're not sitting there. That's why we get a modified audit, because our fixed asset, it's for the underground from the Lomas report, they're not in there yet. So this is
right,
not
so it's going to go up
clean,
then?
It's going to go up.
Okay, now I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Because it stems back to everything we've taken receipt of, we haven't properly booked it.
Yeah.
or not booked it.
Sure. So
one or the other.
So it's like three things that we have to do all together, along with the capital improvement forecasts, depreciation, and reserves. It all is kind of like the same forward-looking financial documents,
right,
which we have.
Right. And so when, you know, when we get that in there with the Loomis, and I, it's suddenly dawning on me when we were going through this with the auditors that, okay, well, we're taking these assets in the ground, and you know, but it's more important than it seems that we book them correctly, because we don't get a true asset picture unless we do it. So
The only thing that it's not in that report, the Lomas report, are the soft cost.
Yeah.
That, you know, when we were going through the developer fee schedule, there were a lot of engineering fee, domicili, that kind of fee that goes into the development, which the auditor said that we should expense, but I somehow felt like those are not deeded to us. Those are gone. But it's about $400K that we didn't record. Those are important asset to be recorded, because $400K is a material number. So I know we just received Riverview as a final fixed asset. I'm going to really spend some time looking at what they deeded to us compared to what we actually spent on Riverview, and see if the soft calls are included in that final fixed asset. If not, then I'll go back to the auditor and say, hey, listen, that's why I want to capitalize that, because the $400K, it's not in the deeded asset, which is, of course, you know, the other side, they just want to give you that deed up, you know,
right,
on above ground, but not below ground.
Right.
So there's some work there, but we will tackle that, yeah.
Right.
So now another number that you want to know is if you go down a little bit. Yes. And I want to find the reserve for you guys. Okay, so net position.
On the bottom, Amelia, what's the page number on where you're going?
Total of 5 of the audit.
Yeah, page 5 under net position, reserve for capital project at the very end. What is that number?
8.7.
So that's the 8.7, which seem... Now remember, we've been spending the property tax, not reserving it. Even though in the budget it's shown as reserve, when we're doing the audit, I don't see that as a category for reserve. And it wanna, thank you. And if we want to build that out, like from now on, we're going to take the property tax and not spend on it and classify as reserve, then we have to raise the revenue and make sure that we cover the revenue, cover all the operating expenses and all the G&A costs.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I'm not sure that when all said and done, we wouldn't want to make whatever it would be, a resolution or an ordinance or whatever.
Yeah.
That said, that we do that.
Yeah, and usually when most companies, after they look at how much they need for fixed asset, then they'll say, I want to retain 90 to 6 months of total expenditure, then that's our reserve. That's the definition of it. And the finance person should be keeping track of it, that we don't fall below that. Right now, in the reserve of that 8 point, I don't see a bucket for that. And historically, we've not been doing that. So, and that's important. You know, how much money do we want to keep aside for rainy day?
Yeah, and part of that catch-up is going to be part of the reason I've been yelling forever that this is so critical is we only have two ways to capture the sufficient reserve level equal to what we think over a long term we need to spend. And there's only two ways to get that. Number one is you raise rates on, you raise reserves on water and sewer, or you go into, you know, the bond market, for example, and stretch that out, and you can have the philosophical discussion all you want about, does it make sense to spread out the rates, keep the rates the same by taking a long-term bond that, you know, everybody understands beginning at the year that, you know, you're going to contribute $12 or $14 or $32 or $64, whatever the number is, okay, against that bond. And that number stays the same, and really the only place that we're raising rates is based on what it's costing us to operate.
And honestly, also, is where are we going in the next 10 years? If there's not going to be major development in this company, then we just keep it as maintenance. Like, we just maintain the fund, grow it, because we're not going to spend a lot of money in further developing the area, so we don't need to have a large reserve. But we do need to think about the Lumis report inside the fixed asset. All those, it's going to be replaced, like, every
year.
Yeah,
there's no question.
Those, when is it going to hit the point that we need to replace everything? I don't know. They would know. But that's, like, where we're going. It's also dictate how we want to plan out these funding.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
So what are we on? Item six?
We talked about item three and four
together.
Right.
And then we talked about the audits. So then does the committee recommend that I move these two audits to the consent calendar?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bill? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Everything goes to the consent calendar.
Got it.
No matter what it is.
No matter what.
The roll call is on the consent calendar.
It's the 15-minute meeting. That's what it is.
I know. I was looking at it with Patrick. I'm like, it seems like we're forgetting things, and they're all on consent this month. So
call the roll and see if anybody wants to pull anything out of the consent calendar. If they say no, then we go home.
Agreed.
I mean, I know this is off topic, but when we're asking for consensus from the board, we don't always have to do a roll call vote.
No. Yeah, we can. You don't always have to do a roll call vote. That's true.
I know. You do. It seems like you do a roll call vote if you're asking what kind of, you know, people like candy. I mean, we're doing roll call votes for everything, seems like.
So, that Mr. Merchant, as the president.
He's the board president.
I mean, we don't have to. We can do by acclamation if we want.
Okay. I feel like big ticket items.
Yes.
I mean, roll call keeps people awake.
Well. So I will endeavor to
let's try and have more
all in favor.
Okay, let's try it and see who notices.
okay, all in favor, you got it.
Okay, it'll be our little secret.
Okay. It's not a secret. You're being recorded.
Yeah, but nobody else is going to listen to it. Right?
No, I get emails from the public asking what I'm talking about in the finance committee.
That kind of scares me.
Yeah. Well, you talked about cross training. Have you done that yet? No. Yeah, I see that when I came on to the front desk, that my check has not deposited. Yeah, I haven't done the
cross-train. We'll cross-train after we train.
So,
and we.
I said my priority is audits.
Yeah. Amelia, item six, is that you? Before we leave that, I wanted to say something. My opinion is that the worksheets that we were just going over,
okay,
those are all. Those should be available to the public. I think the public has a right to review those. So, I mean, I never saw a copy of those, and I can kind of look at John's, but, I mean, we should have if we're going to be looking at them in the meeting, we should have a packet on the website so that people who...
I emailed it to you.
Okay.
And I did forget to put it on the website, but per the Brown Act, I had them printed out for all the audience members.
How many did you print?
I printed, would you like one, sir?
No.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So, are we ready to go on to item number six?
Yes,
new
we are.
Changes.
This is
for chapter four, purchasing and bidding.
In your expanded role, you will now make a presentation on purchasing.
Yes.
Thank you.
All of the previous changes that had to do with SB 1383 that we introduced last month in Ordinance 2025-03, we're going to take those back to the board next week for approval. And Patrick recommended that we have another Ordinance 2025-04 to go over the new changes. What we've done is we have changed the general manager's spending limits on things that aren't approved in the capital improvements plan from $25,000 to $5,000. And expenses that are improved in the capital improvement plan from $50,000 to $25,000. And that goes down the line. So not a lot of changes. Whether it's commodities general services, that's $5,000. So basically the general manager's spending limit without taking it to the board is $5,000.
Right.
Unless it's something that's already gone through CIP and it's under $25,000, then that person can approve
it. And that's for something that's approved and budgeted. It's budgeted.
Right.
And budgeted particularly in the CIP.
If these guys get a contract to refurbish a pump station, okay, and it's $100,000. I'm making the number up.
Yeah.
And then Travis goes out and he orders 4 pumps, and those pumps are, you know, $2,000 a piece or bed number.
Yeah.
$4,000 total. He can order those because we've already approved. You know, we don't want to approve every time he goes out and buys nuts, bolts, and screws. We don't want to.
Sure.
We don't want it back here.
Exactly.
But if it's a new project, okay, then they get a $5,000. And part of this came out of the thinking that's exactly what we were going to do, and that's not what we were doing. Okay, we had a couple of instances when we had things that were policy or other kinds of improvements, i.e. lights and stuff, where stuff started getting approved to the $25,000 limit, and all of a sudden they are bringing it, well, we installed this the other day and we're just telling you about it. So
sure,
we're just cutting the number down. Yes, sir.
For clarification,
yes.
If it's an approved CIP project on the budget,
yeah,
say it's $300,000.
Right.
Once we've got all the parts that we need, do those still have to, like, let's just stick with pumps. Say 2 pumps are $65,000 each. We already knew they were going to be. It's in part of the thing.
You just buy those.
We just buy those because the project itself has already been approved.
Yeah. To the level, what we... Okay,
so that is not at all what this says.
No.
Okay.
That's not what it says. If those are your wishes, then I will change it.
I mean, so we have an approved CIP. We go, yep. You know, Travis is going to do this project. It's $150,000. It's,
yep,
you know, 50 for this, 50 for that, and 50 for something else. But we still have to have assurances that our competitive bid, low cost, no graft, is taking place.
Right.
That's usually been done before it gets brought into the CIP. But let me rephrase that. That should be done getting the bids because you're getting the price because so that way you know. That way, all of that goes to the improvements committee, goes to the board, it's approved. That way, when you guys go, yeah, it's done, I can go to those vendors. I can then go to those vendors. All right, let's get moving.
Okay, so sure. And I agree with you, Travis. So long as you have gotten fixed price bids rather than general estimate, you know, because if we're like, hey, you know, how much is it going to cost to do this? And you go, and you call 2 guys and they go, yeah, $250,000.
Right.
And then you come up and go, yeah, I'd like to budget for $300,000. We go, okay, here's your $300,000. You know, that alone should not authorize you to just go out and spend money. So at some point in the process, we need to have, you know, we need to have the competitive bids with fixed prices that we can compare. And if it's a certain low number, then, you know, if it's $4,000, if Corey wants $4,000, you know, I think we set a $5,000 limit.
Yeah.
If you get a $4,000 pump, it's like, okay, it's under $5,000. Corey can just go buy
it.
You know, but if it's a $50,000 process, then we need to have 3 competitive
exactly.
fixed bids.
Exactly.
So as long as that's in there articulated somewhere, then we're good.
It is. That's articulated in a different part, that the bidding process that we have to have our bids, RFPs, that's all gone into detail in a different part of this.
Everybody who's spending money is pretty much in this room. So, I mean, you know, you make these rules, and they sound great today, and you make it a little lax, but then 5 years from now, none of us are here.
Right.
And we kind of get screwed, so we got to be careful.
Are you getting rid of me within 5 years? Because
no.
I plan on another at least 12.
No.
Okay.
So let me.
Uh-oh.
Somebody may elect to get rid of us.
I was hoping I could clarify.
Go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
So the way it is right now is that the CIP is approved. You know, Travis has gotten some good ideas. It's going to be $500,000 for the water treatment plant conversion. This is our example. So $500,000. And then we had we went out to RFP to have somebody come in and tell us what we needed to do, right? That was $150,000. So I've had an RFP. Now that $150,000 comes back to you. We don't just say, okay, well, the RFP is good, you're the winner. That comes back to you. Now, if in that CIP he's got to buy $12,000 worth of widgets, I'm going to just sign for $12,000 worth of widgets because it's under the $25,000 limit.
$25,000 or $5,000?
No, because it's approved CIP.
Oh,
but approved CIP.
Let's remember Cecilia. Before we do that, the year before, we're going to be like, hey, guys, what's coming up? And so we're going to budget for that stuff.
Yeah.
So, going from budgeting to writing a check, there has to be the competitive bid process in there somewhere.
Right.
Unless it's below our $5,000 threshold.
Yeah. And they're always, well, not always.
Sometimes.
But that's part of our problem. Yeah, you're right. And for the most part, and we need to do even better than we have been doing in this.
Okay.
We need, if we have a $150,000 project we're going to competitively bid it with three people, and then we're going to pick the winner.
Right.
And that's all in front of a procurement process.
And Cecilia, what's your input?
I was going to say that we are governmental, and we have to do the three bid. And I didn't read the whole purchasing bid. I'm pretty sure Petra has already read what is required for governmental to put in that three bid.
Right.
And as far as the audit, they do go down to that level and an interim level to make sure that whatever you're spending, you've gone through that three bid. And if you don't, it will be a management letter comments that, yeah, or a material weaknesses that you don't go through with that, because that's part of our policy.
And so there's a large number of projects of that magnitude that we do,
mm-hmm,
that we're getting everything from a single source. There's a lot of projects where it's a piece of machinery we're going to buy.
And only one company makes it.
And one company, yep, we get it from one company. And then the other part of that contract is the labor that we're buying to install it, and the labor to consult on it, and all that other stuff.
Because most of our lift stations have flight pumps in them. Okay, you're only going to get flight pumps from a flight dealer. I can't go to Granger or ABC Pump and buy a flight pump. You're going to go to the flight dealer. Now, you could go to ABC Pump, and he goes, yeah, I'll buy them, but I'm going to put a 40% markup on them. I mean,
yeah,
you're still going to have, I mean, if that process needs to be done. But there are some things that only one company makes.
Like the membranes.
Like membranes. So do we just have to get a sole source? I know there are sometimes, like, we would get, like, a sole source letter, bring it to the board. Or there are times when there's only three people that will actually do this work, and they're like, yeah, I don't want to work for you guys. I've worked for you guys before, or I'm too busy,
Too busy.
So I say, okay, well, send me an email saying, hey, thank you for the opportunity. We're just too busy. Yeah, is that an acceptable?
I think it should be already documented in his, write up from Patrick. Patrick should have said that in the case that, we have a sole vendor.
Sole source.
Yeah, we
what
talk
are
about
the processes,
that.
Should be in there. And but I want to add that when you get the three bid, are you going to present it on the board and, mm-hmm, go through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we generally do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
those are the improvements.
There have been.
There you go. I have that right here in competitive,
yes,
bidding. It talks about.
There have been some circumstances where we just haven't picked a low bidder because, mm-hmm, there could be just such a wide disparity in the bids that it doesn't even make sense to us why they're giving us that quote.
Yeah, because then they make their money in upsells.
Yeah.
But at least it's not controlled by one person. It's done collectively here that everybody's reviewing. That's the whole thing.
So I also wanted... So then we're okay with the changes that are here? Okay. I also wanted to discuss, because, Bill, you had questions about emergency services and what constitutes an emergency service.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I looked on the government code that are notated here in the policy.
It becomes extremely limiting, trust me.
Yeah, so there are these codes. I looked up all these codes. I printed them out, and I sent them to you both. And they tell us exactly what an emergency is. So we don't have to talk about it here. I mean, an emergency is like potential loss of life or property. There are things that we have yet to encounter in the district since I've been here.
So is it in Patrick's stuff?
It's in the code. It's Section 4, Emergency Purchase and Contracting.
Mm. Yeah, and that's mandated. That's not our code that we created.
No.
That's state law. Send out the packet, I'll look that over. Our ordinance was very vague about when we had to adhere to California government code and when the general manager had discretion. That was my interpretation last month when I read it.
Determination of an emergency?
Yeah.
Right? And it says the codes I have to look at?
Authority. Does it say in there you're bound by California codes? Because, I mean, this is a month ago I read it. It said, for instance, and then it said, or as the general manager desires, someone with some really loose.
It says, in cases of emergency, is determined by the board and the general manager as set forth in section 4.01, which is the section
keep reading.
Okay. Above, or when repair or replacement is necessary to permit the continued operation of the district.
You just said or.
The it continued is, operation
it
of
said,
the district.
Wait. Legally, the word or means you said when there's an emergency, then you said when these things apply, or when there's something else.
Or it's not actually up there.
Okay.
I saw you were focusing on that. I don't know if that makes a difference, and I'll shut up, sorry.
No. This has been a big problem in the recent past.
I would think the correct interpretation of what you read is, I'm the general manager, I read the code, and now I'm declaring an emergency because I read the code and it says that I can.
When repair or replacements are necessary to permit the continued operation of the district or to avoid danger to life or property, the general manager may replace or repair any district building, structure, equipment, facility as necessary.
But doesn't it quote, in accordance with blah, 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 doesn't it say that?
In cases of emergency, is determined by the board or the GM as set forth in those emergency codes.
Right. That's fine. That's what it's supposed to say.
And if it's not set forth specifically in those codes, if it is to avoid danger to life or property, the general manager may replace or repair any district building, structure, equipment, or facility, purchase or contract for the necessary commodities.
Okay, but wait a second. We talked about this at some committee last month, and we said... We said that we were going to hold a special board meeting if the general... We said that the limits of the general manager were very finite, like $25,000, and above that, we were going to have a special meeting. And we talked about how, you know, we're going to give it a 24-hour notice. If it needed less than that, we'll have a special meeting with a 2-hour notice, and we'll take the hit from the Brown Act, rather than saying that the general manager can do whatever the heck they want.
And we also talked about just maybe a phone call from the GM to one of you guys and what's going on.
We can have the board emergency group chat, and we can get it done in a minute. There's no reason why we should say that, in case of a real emergency, the general manager can do whatever she wants. And I'm not thinking of you, Amelia.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of previous...
I wouldn't do...
The next 15 years.
No.
Right?
Look back 15 years.
I would obviously let you know before I...
If you look back 15 years for 14 years and 11 and a half months of that, we've kind of been raked over the coals. And it's like there's just no exigent circumstances like maybe there was 40 years ago before text messages were invented.
So as set forth above... The board will convene, so I'm going to change it from the general manager may replace. The board will convene to determine the state of the emergency and give further direction.
Okay, so Cecilia just gave me this. Thank you, Cecilia. Section 4.03, delegation of authority by general manager. If the general manager is unavailable, the department manager or supervisor or acting supervisor, you know, can make the necessary purchases. So that means that the guy that Corey hired last week can do it if you're not around.
So remove section 4.03?
So the whole thing, it just needs to be tightened up so that there's no reason why we have emergency purchases, really. Okay. In this day and age, I mean...
Middle of the night break, that would be about it.
What's that?
The middle of the night break would be about it.
Yeah, but...
They want us to call them, so they're coming in.
If there's a middle of the night break, you're probably going to fix it, right? And if you can't, I mean, how much money can you spend between 3 a.m. and 8 a.m.? That's my whole point. How much money can you do? Now, trust me, you guys gave me an education yesterday with a VATCON, but it's like, it's a limited amount of money you can spend between 3 and 8 a.m.
One IMAX will cost you $8,000.
What's a high max?
It's a couple.
Do you have those in stock?
We have some, but that's where we may, in the middle of the night, we may go and grab it from another agency or something else. So the money spent once we, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, that's fair if there's a water line break, but this is a much more general ordinance than just that. But I agree. I mean, if there's something going on, we don't want any BS stopping us from repairing it.
Because I have no problem making phone calls as I'm being called back in to fix something.
Group text.
You know, I have no problem calling Amelia saying, hey, this is what I got going on. Yeah. I'm on my way to evaluate. You know, I'll call you back. Because that's generally what I'm doing as I'm coming into work when something happens. But, you know, if I'm at the water plant and actually, you know, pretty much, I could get a hold of somebody on the way to work, you know.
I mean, we can solve any problem really quickly if we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's 4.4 there. It says that the general manager shall properly report to the board any emergency. Sorry, I cannot see that far.
The emergency.
Action taken and the circumstances surrounding such emergency. So we can change that.
If you keep reading, it says something crazy like within 14 days.
Right, so that's what I'm saying, that we should change that to say promptly define, like at the same time call one of the board members and have the decision ratify and approve verbally in a text or something. So we can change that. If
I mean, all of this has come out of particularly, and I agree with that. I mean, we can streamline that because in that situation, you know, I don't particularly want to tie the hands of anybody if we have to get a clamp in the middle of the night or do something more drastic than that. But, you know, if we're pulling out parts of the water consultant's plan to do an integrated water master plan, or we're adding in or taking out public comment to that thing, and it's under $25,000 and they're approving it and we're finding out about it 4 months later, no.
Right.
No, that's where this started.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, it really doesn't have as much relevance, you know, to running out and buying a pump if we have to. I mean, if we're buying hard infrastructure in the middle of the night, I'm not concerned at all. If we're finding out about a policy change or the implementation of some consulting service that wasn't there when we first talked about it.
Yep.
Because it's under 25 grand, then I got a problem.
That's all been taken care of because it's under five now.
And we did. It happened.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's like, if you guys go down and buy a pump or a valve, nobody cares. But if you say there was a water leak, and we've seen stuff like this, if you say, oh, there's a water leak last night, so I went and bought a brand new F-250. It's like, yeah, see, it says right here I can do that. It's like,
what? Well, they needed that to bring the clamp back.
What? You know, that's how I'm, that's all.
Yeah, no, and I understand what you're saying. I do have one question. If for some reason the general manager or director of whoever's above me as I'm coming in, if those people aren't available, are we allowed to act to try to contact board members without getting in trouble?
No, absolutely. I don't care.
Because that was a hard no with
other
people. No. Yeah, I mean, and we're almost working in those conditions now. I mean, Cecilia's got something she needs to know an answer to. She calls him or she calls me.
Yeah, I just want to make sure
where we are.
Because, you know, I don't need
no, that,
a...
I appreciate what you're saying. But, you know. It was like that in my last job. No. You never talk to the big boss ever, you know. But, no, that's not how we work. People who say that, it's because they're hiding something. Hmm. They want to filter the information. They want to hide stuff. And that's the opposite of what we want here.
I just want to make sure, I mean, moving forward, you know, try to get a hold of, you know, the chain of command.
No, call Mimi if that doesn't work.
And I think, no, Amelia.
I heard it.
We
can try that.
Call me Amelia. Good.
I'll give you the number. Okay.
Well, she's.
I think we. You know, you can if you want. Bring it. You just heard all this.
I heard it. Let me work on it.
Bring it back, you know, and explain to us where the changes are when all five of them are here, and we'll go from there. I don't have a big problem with what we're talking about here.
I have one more request. Under 4.01,
yes,
and it says describe in government code section 8558 and 54 something. When it's emergency, I don't have time to go search another database. Is it possible to insert what it says into here?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and Travis is going to be telling me, "Hey, under my authority on 4.02."
Yeah. I'm going to go. Oh, John, is hit the fan. Give me some money.
there's a waterfall in the middle of Puerto.
Okay.
We're
spilling 1 billion gallons of sewage.
So, back to the big idea, after all this discussion, if there is an emergency, no matter what it is, the board needs to be contacted and asked if you want to have a special board meeting. These are the circumstances, or do you want to go ahead?
One of the board members.
One of the board members.
Not all of them.
Yeah, one of the board members. Board president, then I would go to the vice president and down the line.
No, and that becomes... That becomes even expanding on that. If he calls me at 4 a.m. and he needs a part or something's wrong, and I say, you know, do it.
Right.
That's it. An emergency meeting, you know, a large portion of the dam at Lake Clementia seems to be eroding. Well, do what you got to do at 4 o'clock in the morning, and maybe we should have a meeting.
Yeah. And then we'll have a meeting at
that's
7.
That's just common sense.
When we're all up. Yeah.
Okay.
So let me work on this. I will send you a draft before the board meeting, or do you want it to come back to finance? Now, I'll send you guys both a draft, and then you have to tell me that's
right. We can get rid of this at the board meeting.
Good. Okay.
If we get enough time to read it between now and next Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay. And again, it's an ordinance because it's changing the code, so it will be
discussion and first reading.
Exactly this month, and then if the whole board wants to make any changes.
Yep.
Okay, so are we moving to item 7, which
is
comments? And this will be a comment because we can't take any action on it, but we need to figure out for Wednesday how we want to notify at the meeting that we've made the kind of changes, structural changes to the management that we've made, and probably, like we talked about, have some kind of an organization chart, which probably wouldn't be difficult to take all the way down to the
piece of cake. Yeah.
you know, like, you don't have to put the names of every utility worker in there.
I wouldn't put any of the names.
But put a box in there and say utility worker, you know, six or however many there are. But, and there should be, and I'll write it if you want, after we talk about it, some kind of communication with the public. Or something, you know, even worse than that, something we can give to Gail, right?
Right.
I'm not reading about what I didn't mean to say in the paper. Okay. So but we need to have that for Wednesday night.
No, that was my next question.
Yeah, and that
I guess this is a big change and not everybody knows. And
that's an agenda item, right?
That's an agenda item. Yeah. And I'll put the org chart in there too.
Yeah, Bill wasn't in the consent
calendar. No.
Yeah, that was a joke. We need that on the. We need to have that as an agenda item. I was even going to, John, and this is something to think about. You know, everywhere I've ever been, the general manager goes to closed session. I guess we just do it. We'll just have it on as an item because we do with the, like you said, the org chart and the new. Our new hire here,
And do we talk about Eric?
Oh yeah. What about other staff?
We'll talk about the changes.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we will address the changes.
And that's a closed session item, but we should also. I think everybody's going to want to address the issue of out-of-class pay with our new thing. I don't know if it's a...
Okay. I think that Patrick will put that on closed session.
I mean, it's just something we should address up front rather than dragging people.
And we, either that we've talked about them or done them, or we're gonna do them. And we're
Amelia's new here. It's probably... General manager, general run. It's a setup, but it's a general manager thing. But she's just starting, so we should give her input.
Okay.
So, do you want me to come to closed session? You have one item.
We have one item. What is that? That's the director of operations thing.
No. That will.
Well, we have more than one item.
Well, then we'll talk about
I think we're adding potential litigation to the.
We'll talk about that after.
Okay.
So, with that said, that being your comment, sir, we're on to item number 8.
Yes, we are adjourned. It is 2:14.